podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And it's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap, and I'm delighted to be joined over Skype by Sanjay Bhandari, who has obviously been on the Anfield Wrap before, back in November when you first became chair of Kick It Out. So Sanjay, welcome back to the Anfield Wrap.
Thanks for inviting me again, John.
So obviously, as I've just said, you became chair in November. I remember when we spoke, a lot of your talk around then, a lot of what you wanted to do was a lot of listening, a lot of traveling. So first of all, did you do that, and how interesting did you find it?
I did a lot of traveling. I probably had about 3 or 4 months where I met somewhere between 200 and 250 people from about 70 different organizations from across football. I learned a lot, and I'll probably share more of that as we release our strategy over the coming weeks and months. The biggest thing I learned actually was that people were really grateful for actually just turning up and listening, and that is definitely going to become part of our business as usual. We have to do more of that and more listening to people to understand what is it they actually want from us, and where do we think their needs are. So it was it was really, really useful. I think we've got some really good ideas as to how we could be even more effective going forward.
Well, obviously events in the last month, you know, are never part of anyone's plan, and never sort of, you know, something that, you know, no one was kind of quite expecting. Have you, I guess what we've been interested to start is, have you sort of been surprised just how much, you know, the death in America has, you know, caused this kind of this ripple effect that has led to players taking the knee in the UK? Because obviously, unfortunately, you know, what happened to George Floyd is not an isolated incident. It's something that's happened before, but it seems to have triggered something in a lot of people, which is this idea of enough is enough. Why do you think, you know, that is, and the fact that, as I say, it has led to such a huge reaction, not just, you know, well, throughout the UK, but particularly in football?
Yeah, it's led to this massive change in society, actually, isn't it? In the people seem really, really engaged on the subject of racism and equality in a way that they haven't for years. You saw Ben Mee's reaction last night after the Burnley Man City game. And it's just funny because I was asked this earlier today, and I had been thinking about what has been different this time, and there's probably a few different factors, and who knows, but I suspect being in lockdown had an impact, in the sense that we're all confined. Any news item, anything that comes up, we're really highly engaged in it, because we're not distracted by all the stuff that we're normally doing every day. So being confined and locked down is probably part of it. Actually, you're probably more engaged in community spirit, because you've seen some of the amazing positive things that have happened during lockdown, where there has been this outpouring of community spirit, and there's a sense of greater community cohesion. And then I think there is something really, really specific about that video of that killing of George Floyd, because there was a very similar death a couple of years ago, Eric Garner, very similar circumstances. But I think there's something about that video. It's prolonged. You have the person doing the filming. Actually, you can see them try to intervene, and you can see one of the policemen reach for their taser or their gun, just casually move their hand towards it as a warning to don't come near. And then there's Chauvin with his knee and his hand on George Floyd, and with his hand in his pocket. And it's just so casual. The brutality of that is so casual, and it's so prolonged. And he is looking provocatively in the camera, almost as if to say, I'm doing this because I can, and there's nothing you can do about it, and I know there's going to be no consequences on me, because there never has been for years for people like me doing this. And I think it's that casual brutality that in the particular context has probably triggered the scale of reaction, because every one of us probably puts ourselves in the position of the person behind that camera going, there is nothing else I can do except for film this. I can't intervene, I can't help, and I feel powerless. And so I think there's something about that that has in the right in these right circumstances has triggered, no, we've had enough of this.
So much of what we've seen in the Premier League seems to be player led, and I was interested in something that Jamie Carragher said a week ago, where he said that, you know, he used to think, well, basically every footballer thinks the next generation's pampered, you know, they've got it too easy and things like that, and they're not as tough as we are. But he said that, you know, these guys, you know, the players playing now are just on another level to what he was in terms of their social awareness, but also their ability to speak out in a coherent way and to have the bravery, if you like. And as someone who works with footballers, as someone who, you know, is speaking to footballers kind of, you know, all the time, you know, about these issues, you must be so impressed and so pleased that what football clubs are doing is led by these amazing footballers who just, you know, I don't want to single anyone out, but I look at someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold because he is from Liverpool and he's so young and he's speaking better than a politician on TV about these issues that are, you know, so kind of widespread through society, and just to have the kind of courage to do that, I think speaks a lot. But also, you know, the sense that they speak and the fact that they're backing that up with action as well. And Ben, me, you mentioned before. I mean, what a wonderfully thought out, but also kind of spontaneous thing to say, by the way, when you've just played 95 minutes against football against one of the best teams you've ever played, do you know what I mean, and you're absolutely shattered, to kind of come out with that statement, you know, it's so impressive, isn't it?
It's incredibly impressive, and I think Jamie Carragher is right that next generation, we all think that the generation behind us is not as good as us and we had it tougher and they're all pampered. And guess what? My parents' generation would have said that about me. That's almost a natural reaction that we all think. The reality is that they are tougher in a way, and they are prepared to put up with less. So they're going to be less tolerant of discrimination and less tolerant of racism. But I suppose one thing that has also changed is that their platforms are so much bigger. Footballers have always been really powerful and always been really influential because they always have this enormous media presence. But it's very different now because it's not quite so dependent on the mainstream media or TV or their clubs. They've got their own individual platforms. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo's a billionaire because of his Instagram following and his ability to monetize that. And so much of the business model for young footballers is also built into their social media followings. But they're using that for positive purposes. And you're right, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho and Rian Brewster and all of these young people. And then you see Troy Deeney, Wes Morgan and so on behind the shirts. They're all using their platforms in these positive ways. And actually, they're all so mature. I can't get over with Trent and Marcus Rashford as well. I was never that mature at that age. I wish I were like them when I were their age, that I was able to have a platform and be able to use it in the way in which they do. But also, I think you're right to highlight Ben Mee, and there are others. Jordan Henderson, I know, was really active in the shirts and what he did as well around the NHS at the start of lockdown. And I know Mark Noble and others have also been really heavily involved. You see, it's their willingness and ability to come out and speak, and what Ben Mee said last night. And actually, don't forget, he was asked about the game. And he said, no, before I talk about the game, I want to talk about this. That tells you about the priorities of the club. And Sean Dyche said exactly the same thing. And I've been talking today with the chief exec of Burnley because I know him. And they're all talking exactly the same way about the priorities of the club and what the club stands for. And this is not the values of Burnley Football Club. And this is nothing to do with Burnley Football Club. And I think players have been doing an amazing job in doing that and in standing up. And it's really, really important that we also focus on the white players, because in a way, if you're in a minority, people expect you to say something, but people don't always expect that of the white players. And I think that's what's been really impressive about what Ben Mee did and what some of the other players and the captains have been doing.
I mean, just last night, I mean, you mentioned it last night, where we both kind of talked about it. It's, you know, I saw some tweets, you know, from some Burnley fans who we deal with, who just said, you know, they were heartbroken to see it, and you know, it's just so tough to see your sort of football club kind of, you know, brought into this like that. And it is tough, I'm sure, for throughout the football club. They've reacted in completely the right way, but it just shows that and this always happens, you know, whenever there's attempts to progress society, and whenever there's attempts to bring in greater equality, that there's always people who fight against it, and that will always be the case. And how much, I guess, do we need to accept that, and how much do we need to not get too kind of downhearted by it, I guess, is what I'm saying, because there was inevitably going to be some backlash when you do something like this. It's not like you're going to get a whole group of people suddenly go, well, on that note, you know what I mean? I was wrong all along, you know. Is there an element of, look, this is going to happen, and we just need to make sure that our voice is louder, our voice is stronger, and then that we're showing sort of the right unity so we can persuade the people who can be persuaded, I guess.
I think you're spot on. This is a feature, not a bug. You know, we're always going to have this. We always knew we were going to have this. Every time you have a movement, there's always a bit of a reaction, and there is always going to be a hardcore of people that, no matter what you say, they're always going to be opposed to equality, or they're going to find a reason to make this about them. And so that doesn't mean we shouldn't do the things that we're doing. That doesn't mean we should right, let's scrap the shirts or scrap taking a knee, or, you know, we'll scrap doing all the things that we're going to do. It means we're going to carry on doing those things. We knew we were going to get some opposition. What's been different this time is, look how quick Burnley were to close it down, to say, actually, you're not supposed to close it down, to say, this is where we stand. It was by half time they'd issued a press statement saying, condemning it and saying that they would ban those supporters if they could be identified. So, and then you have Sean Dyche saying exactly the same thing. You have Ben Mee saying exactly the same thing. And the fact that we're actually having the conversation rather than it, you know, we just ignore it and pretend it didn't happen. I think those things are different, and they show that there may be a possibility this time that there's more meaningful long-term action that's going to come out of this. You know, I think the challenge with all of these things is how you keep it going and how you sustain it. And it's not just about reacting to the incident, because we've had lots of incidents in the past and it hasn't necessarily led to lasting change. So we have to stay engaged beyond this and stay involved. My sense, though, is there does feel like there's a bit more engagement. There's and that people, we're in a stage of sort of anger and confusion, and some people are feeling both, and some people are feeling one or the other. But it, you know, through that, we have to focus on what are the things that we're actually going to do that are going to make a difference in the short term, in the medium term, and the long term. And my worry is, in the past, maybe the instinctive reflex of many people involved, not just in football, but in all areas of industry, all parts of the world and society and any area of activity, is to do something high profile and glossy that doesn't necessarily have any long term impact. And that's, we've got to guard against that and actually do the things that are going to have meaningful long term impact.
So is that the kind of thing that you're working on now as an organisation to make sure? Because obviously, as I said at the start, you know, none of this was expected to you when you took on to the position, but you have to react to it, and you have to capitalise on it, if that's not too sort of glib a word. And so is that what you're working on as an organisation now, to say, well, how do we make sure people care about this when the footballers have stopped taking a knee, or when, even when the football season's over and goes into sort of close season?
Yeah, and it will be a very small close season, thankfully, this year. We just had 3-month close season. Yeah, absolutely. And so last week I published something which is a bit of a blueprint for change, and we've had quite a few comments on that, and I've shared that with the Premier League and the FA and others, PFA, the EFL, and I've been getting quite a bit of support from those bodies and feedback from clubs and so on the different suggestions and recommendations I've made. And I think in that sort of 900 word article I wrote, there were probably 15, 20 concrete suggestions of things that we can be doing that would have that medium to long term sort of impact. So things like really more around driving inclusion, setting targets for the number of people of colour that would be in the boardroom or would be coaches, you know, having the infrastructure to make that happen in a 5-year timeline, because unless you set targets, nothing will change. We've tried doing it without any targets for 40 or 50 years, and how's that work for us? So I'll tell you what, why don't we try something different? Because if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always got. So now is the time to do some of these different things. So I think most of the recommendations that we've been making are around how you create more inclusive environments in football, and really on the basis that there are probably three stubborn problems. One is boardrooms are predominantly male and white. Two is the absence of black coaches. We expect the coaches, you know, by and large, they often come from the former players. Well, you know, 30% players, 5% max coaches are black. And then the last one is the absence of Asian players. I mean, the reality is largest single ethnic minority in the country, really just not visible at all on the pitch. So we have to have some, you know, structured responses to those. And what I've been putting out is some suggestions for that. And then also last week, Paul Elliott from the FA wrote an open letter to the whole of football, suggesting this sort of voluntary code for equality leadership in football. And I was working with Paul on that, and we'll continue to work with him on that. That I was a signatory to that letter, and I'm keen that we do that. And I was really pleased they said it will be a 3-month consultation period, and only 3 months, because we want action. We don't want this kicked into the long grass. So I'm getting that sense from the leadership teams and the people I speak to, they want change. And so now we're focused on what are the things that we do. I suppose separately, we're always going to have these little bits. We're going to have incidents. We're going to have incidents of discrimination. So, you know, whilst football is behind closed doors, that's predominantly going to be online.
Yeah.
So one of the big things that I've been really focusing on is we've been working with some AI companies around some social media monitoring and actually starting to track some of this stuff and start turning that into actionable insight. So yeah, there's a pilot that I've developed with a company called Signify, and we're having conversations with lots of clubs and lots of organisations about how we start using that really effectively.
Yeah, and that's important, isn't it? Because I know Ian Wright, someone in particular, who's highlighted recently the online abuse that he has got. I'm always staggered that how often it comes from accounts that are personal, that are just people's accounts. You know, the two that Ian Wright highlighted, you know, it wasn't difficult for people to find out who those people were. And, you know, although that's a good thing that they're able to be tracked and responsible, at the same time, it just shows how little sort of fear that there is, you know, to kind of express these views. And I don't know whether it's because they don't see Ian Wright as a real person who reads things. You know, he's just maybe a person on the telly. And I think there's lots of us who at times in our lives have seen celebrities, if you like, in that way. But it also kind of, I don't know, frightens me a little bit that, you know, people aren't more scared to kind of to sort of send these messages, because I don't know why that is. But I mean, for the reason and whatever the sort of personal motivation, like, people shouldn't have to put up with that, should they? And it's no good saying, oh, if you're in the public eye, you have to put up with certain things. It just should not include, you know, the racial abuse, the likes. And I'm glad Ian Wright highlighted it, because, you know, maybe a younger guy wouldn't. Maybe a younger guy feel, well, this is what I have to put up with. But Ian has, you know, been around the block a few times, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, and is able to stand up and say, no, actually, this shouldn't be part and parcel of my job.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be, and it isn't. And look, you can. Ian's been around the block, and he's a feisty character, and he can stand up for himself. And we all know, you know, don't read the comments, don't read the DMs. You probably get it. I get it. People like the players will get it. You know, 10 times and 50 times the level that we get. And you know, don't read them. But guess what? We're all human as well, so occasionally we do, and occasionally you do. And I think that's what Ian said about the first instance earlier this summer, earlier this spring, saying, you know, normally I don't read my DMs on Instagram, and I just happen to read it. And I think a lot of it is I suspect a lot of the motivation for those people on the other end of the site, the keyboard warriors, is there's anonymity there, isn't there? And it doesn't feel like it's real, and they don't see that real person and the impact, and they assume it has no impact on, or they don't care, or they're just after attention for themselves. There are lots of different motivations for that. But there is a real person there, and it does impact them. And I think he was really genuinely, you know, shaken by it. And because he's a human being, and that can happen to anyone. And I suppose my big concern for players that are currently playing is that must impact your mentality, that must impact your form. So we have to have a few different elements to the solutions here. We've got to help the players with how do you deal with these things, and how can you look after yourself and protect yourself. I think I said before, you know, Twitter is the world's biggest Wetherspoons. And, you know, if you were a player, you wouldn't go into Wetherspoons on your own. You'd go with a bit of protection, and you'd make sure that, you know, that bloke in the corner nursing a pint, muttering to himself, you're probably not going to engage with them. Well, guess what? On Twitter, that person just talks to you directly, right? And they get amplified by other people, maybe. So there's a bit we could do with the players to help them, and the players already do quite a bit. But there's a bit that we can do with the social media companies. They need to be more responsible and tackle some of this stuff. I know they're doing some stuff, but we need to make them move faster. There's stuff that we're doing with governments around the Online Harms Bill and how we can make that, you know, have more of a regulation of the social media companies so that they're kind of forced to do it. And then there's a bit where we have to help ourselves, where actually, and this is the bit that we're trying to do with the social media monitoring, which is actually let's let football look after ourselves. You know, let's start, you know, getting the insight and understanding what's the nature of the people that are doing this. And if law enforcement, if it's difficult for them to wrap a case up in a bow, let's let us do it, because we can do it. We've got some of the artificial intelligence that we can connect across all these platforms, and let's let it make it easier for law enforcement. And so it's all of those things together that I think are going to be part of the solution. But the bottom line is players shouldn't have to put up with it. Pundits and celebrities and anyone involved in the game of football shouldn't have to put up with it. And the reason why they are having to put up with it is because keyboard warriors are hiding behind the anonymity of the crowd. And, you know, there's nearly always numbers. That's normally a look at the username, and there's nearly always a whole sequence of numbers in the username. That's a clue as to who's behind it.
I mentioned before, Sanjay, that any sort of progress in society has always been met with sort of conflict and resistance. And it's really interesting to look at your very nice office behind you. You're showing me up in terms of background. I'm in the baby's nursery. You've got a blackout blind here, but something you've got there is a picture of Muhammad Ali, and yeah. I was sort of looking at that while you were talking, and Muhammad Ali's seen as a hero now, and every second sports person or even individual talks as him as someone who's a hero to them, and that wasn't always the case. I think it's fair to say when he was most active, from a political point of view, he got a lot of the accusations that people are actually hitting people with today, you know, from the White Lives Matter Brigade, you know, Muhammad Ali was called a racist. Muhammad Ali was got a lot of the criticism that you see people from the Black Lives Matter movement now receiving. But over time, Muhammad Ali has been shown to be correct. Muhammad Ali is now held up. And I guess that gives us hope, doesn't it? That, you know, for those of us who are making the arguments, you know, for equality, for Black Lives Matter, you know, history will prove us right. We just need to have the, you know, 1 ounce of the courage and strength that Muhammad Ali had.
Yeah, I think it's about staying on the right side of history. But I think there are more people on this side now, and it's great to hear, you know, so many brown people like me and white people like you talking about why this is Black Lives Matter. It's not BAME Lives Matter. It's not White Lives Matter or All Lives Matter. It's Black Lives Matter. And there's a really good reason for that. And there are really good reasons why we should object to White Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. And I'm hearing those arguments being made by other people. And that's the important thing. You don't have to be a black person to make that argument. And that is, I think, the source of hope that we're on the right side of history and we're moving forward. And of course, you know, so again, I got asked this question on the news this morning, and you know, someone had sent an email into BBC News saying, "Can you explain to me what's the problem with White Lives Matter?" And so my response was, "Well, of course, there's nothing wrong with the words. There's nothing wrong with they're very inoffensive words. Of course, White Lives Matter. Of course, Black Lives Matter. Of course, all lives matter. It's not about that. It's about why those words are used." Who uses those words, what context, what's the purpose behind it? And the challenge with White Lives Matter and All Lives Matter is they're, you know, being used by some people deliberately in the far right to deflect away from this what Black Lives Matter really means and what it really stands for, which is about fairness and equality. That's all it means. It's about fairness and equality. And some people are wanting to set this up as Black v White, and thankfully when even the Daily Mail is saying it's everyone versus racists, then you know that the groundswell is with us. It's everyone versus racists. It's not Black v White.
You mentioned the word hope there, and I was going to sort of ask you about that, really, because I mean, obviously you're an intelligent guy, you were successful in what you were doing before you sort of went and decided to dedicate your life, at least in the short term, kind of to kick it out. That must be because you have hope. You know, you wouldn't be sort of in this position now if you expected everything to stay like this forever.
Yeah, well, if you're a leader, I think the job of a leader is to be optimistic. Okay, because we can all do the analysis and we can all see what's wrong, but I think you have to try and find the light at the end of the tunnel on the way through, and there are plenty of things that could cause us to be optimistic over the last few months. Look at the way our country has reacted to lockdown and COVID. We've adapted and we've got on with things, and the clap for carers, that was a grassroots movement that starts from the bottom. And I know some of the folks at the Anfield Rap been involved in some of these charity movements around, you know, the PPE in Merseyside. You've seen what Marcus Rashford's done with children's meals. There are so many things to be optimistic about. The Black Lives Matter thing with the shirt, that was the players. That was the players' choice. That was the players' idea. You know, we can contribute ideas, but this was coming from them. Those are the reasons to be hopeful. The reaction of people like Ben Mee yesterday, the reaction of Burnley Football Club, the reaction of Sean Dyche, and it was instinctive. They didn't even think twice about it, did they? So all those things, those are all the reasons why we have hope, because it feels like there are more advocates and allies and people on our side that we can rely on.
And just before we go, Sanjay, obviously, first and foremost, you're a football fan. We established last time you support the wrong team in red, but you must be made up as same as everyone to have football back on the telly. You know, your team played Friday night, and I'm sure you enjoyed the stance. I'm sure you enjoyed what you saw from the teams before the match, you know, from a point of view of all the work you're trying to do. But I'm sure equally you enjoyed it when that whistle went and you got to watch your boys again.
Yeah. Well, really enjoyed the all the clubs taking a knee and demonstrating that solidarity. And yeah, of course, I want to be talking about football with my friends. You know, that's what I want to be doing. I rarely get the chance to do that. So it's nice. Thanks for asking. And yeah, it was good to see a game again. And it feels a bit like early season, doesn't it? You know, like you've had most early season games, the first 10 games of a season, you don't know which way the results are going to go because they're always a bit temperamental. And we've probably already seen that. You know, Liverpool started a little bit slowly at the weekend, but thankfully they don't, you know, for your sake, they don't have very much work to do to get your hands on the trophy. But yeah, and it was a decent game on Friday. The only thing I feel slightly sorry for you. I was saying to Lizzie before, actually, that when United won the title in 93, I was 25 years old. And all I'd seen as a kid was Liverpool win the title year after year after year through the 70s and 80s. And I just wanted to see United win it once in my lifetime. And so I know how I felt celebrating that in 93, and I just feel sorry for you that you won't be able to celebrate that in the same way, but I hope for your sake you're a creative bunch of people, aren't you? You'll find some ways to celebrate safely, and honestly, I wish you all the well. You're the best team in the country and in Europe at the moment, and you deserve the success. It's overdue, but I'd like to think I'm a football fan first, and so a Man United fan second after that. And obviously, I want us to beat you every time we play you, but you deserve the title. So, and we love Jurgen Klopp as well, and he helped us out on an event over the last few months as well. So
that's great. No, it's good to hear. So, Jake, thanks a lot for coming and joining us. Do everyone obviously check out all the work that Kicking Out are doing, obviously, throughout the year. And we'll look out for what Sanjay has planned across all social media, Kicking Out on social media. Make sure you follow him on Twitter or whatever platform you use. But thanks a lot, Sanjay, and nice to see you again.
No worries. Thank you. Sports Social Podcast Network.